It's time to bring you inside the Toronto-Waterloo Innovation Corridor. Join host Todd Cooney and co-host Dean Mariani as they chat with CEOs, founders, and disruptors, some of the most influential people in this tech ecosystem. This is the Startups to Scale-Ups podcast.
Today, we are sitting down with the dynamic Flavio Gomes, CEO and founder from LogicSense, and he has been a serial entrepreneur his entire life. Why don't you talk a little bit about your background and expertise in this specific space?
Wow, that's a great question, and I'm not certain you can drill it down to any one particular episode of my life where I've earned the title of a subject expert. Or subject matter expert, but I just knew at a young age that I had a different wiring, and I was a software developer as a child. I learned how to program on my own. I was really fascinated with technology, and I had the PC environment exposed to me, and it was a really fun time in my life where I knew that this type of technology, I knew that computers were gonna have a tremendous impact on the lives of others. And so that kind of drove me down that path. And then in the early 90s, I decided to start a small consultancy around building out networks and doing software development for folks. And a part of that experience was being exposed to the internet. And it was a fascinating time of my life because this was before web browsers. It was very an archaic type of network to understand at first, but I used that as a support mechanism to help my consultancy business. And then I had some great insight in terms of how global and powerful this communication medium was going to become. And I thought if I was interested in it, others might be. So I found myself installing a 56K frame relay connection, and that's just a complex word for a very slow and archaic but super expensive connection. I think it cost me about 12 grand at the time per month. But my business was relatively healthy, and it was a risk that I was about to take, and I would take that and sell it to other technologists and enthusiasts. And I grew a reasonably sized ISP. And then with my technology background, we built a lot of the tools to manage that business. And then we saw the writing on the wall where the large organizations, the big carriers, were coming in, and they had deeper pockets than I did. I was still a very small organization. So I sold the customer base off and took that technology, and it's what formed LogicSense today. And it's the billing systems and the management systems that manage the interactions with our customers.
Awesome. So is there a specific individual, like your young days, that was an influence on you into getting into this kind of industry, or was it just self-discovery? Was it, you know, talk a little bit about that.
Well, this might date me a little bit, but it was Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. I mean, we read a lot about them. They were inspiring. They were changing the world in terms of the technology that they were building. And so when we were kids, we kind of modeled ourselves after those guys. But we were technologists more than capitalists back in those days. We were really excited about the technology, as most technologists are. And in particular with the ISP, what gave me the greatest joy was going into my small little data center and seeing all the lights and seeing all the technology put in use. But then as you develop scar tissue from building your business and the challenges of building your business, and then as you get older and you mature and you raise a family and raise kids, you know, the sort of the business principles start to creep back into the thinking. But yeah, it was Steve Jobs, it was Bill Gates, to a lesser extent, Larry Ellison, and those types of heroes that we had as kids.
And so same kind of question, influencer, but today, from a business standpoint or a leadership standpoint, is someone that you model your leadership after? It's like there's certain books that you've read or certain entrepreneurs that you say, you know, That's who I'm going to kind of model myself after.
Yeah, I mean, you'll probably get this answer often because it's a common thing, but I think Elon Musk is one that really provides a lot of inspiration because he tackles some of the largest challenges and problems. And I think he's a great visionary in terms of seeing how a confluence of events is changing society and how we look at either the consumption of energy or how we transport ourselves. And he did well with his previous businesses, but he also faced a lot of challenges, and those challenges have become public. And I think he seems to have a human element to sort of his journey. And he's a real intelligent guy, and he has an incredible work ethic. So he'd be one that I'd look up to. You know, just from a business building principle, business building perspective, Jack Welch was a guy that really would introduce a lot of business process and understanding how to organize your company better. And then there's guys like Adam Houtson from OpenText and various other local leaders and mentors. Jay Haynes that runs eCentire, you know, great guy, clever guy, done tremendously well, has a really good grasp on some business principles that I enjoy and find valuable. So that would probably, you know, be the group of people that I would look up to that I can think off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think, you know, you kind of hit it on the head there with the challenges. You know, you just celebrated 20 years, which is a phenomenal accomplishment for any company. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Can you kind of go back to year one and maybe go over kind of the trials and tribulations that you had to go through as an early entrepreneur?
That's fascinating. And I think it's more of a unique sort of story. We never really set out to build a business per se. We just really wanted to enjoy exploring technology. So in the early days, we didn't really have a vision. That vision developed over time as we became more exposed to certain things. And I think the first year was basically, how do we create a model where we can be sustainable and viable on our own steam? We were absolutely enthused with the internet in the early stages. And, you know, an inflection point like that happens probably once every 20 years. In the 70s, it was the PC revolution. In the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, it was the internet evolution. And now, 20 years later, we're seeing the IoT evolution. And so it's those inflection points that really excite us. And so that first year was fascinating. We were just a bunch of technologists that were having a lot of fun. And we were young. We didn't have the types of commitments like family or mortgages at the time to really concern ourselves with risk. We were pretty focused on the technology. We weren't afraid of what we were, you know, of the challenges that we were facing at that time. And so it enabled us the time to really develop our skills and to really understand who we were as people. And I started with a bunch of friends. And I think if I could point to one thing that was probably very profound in terms of our sustainability was deciding who was going to lead. And I think it's a challenge for a lot of founders is when, you know, they form together as a group and they form a partnership and they want to tackle a problem, eventually you can operate in a democratic way, and we generally do, but I think you got to identify early who will be that individual to lead the business moving forward. And if you could do that early, you're going to eliminate or avoid a lot of challenges that you might face down the road.
And just to provide some context to the listeners, at least, can you just give a brief overview of, you know, what LiderSense is and what's kind of the problem that you guys are looking to solve in the world?
Well, it's fascinating. We've seen this significant change in how businesses interact with their customers. And in the old days, it used to be a one-time sort of model where you build something and you sell it once. Mm. What we're seeing is this really rapid evolution of where businesses want to engage in long-term relationships with their customers on a recurring basis. And the management of that relationship gets complex from a monetization perspective. So we've developed a platform that manages the billing of recurring relationships And so it's like a subscription environment. But however, we see the future where it's not just subscriptions, it's pay for what you use or consume pay sort of model. And the complexity of managing that is substantial. So we've built technology and tools to manage a usage-based economy. And that's what we've coined several years ago. We see a future where customers pay for what they use. And businesses are going through a digital transformation in order to get to that state of their relationships with their customers.
Yeah, I think one thing that you touched upon earlier on was leadership. You know, and the one thing that we found fascinating, you know, doing a little bit of digging, is you actually have a CEO luncheon every 2 months for the employees to kind of sit around a round table, talk about the vision of the company, and really just have an open table, open discussion about the direction.
Yeah.
How has that benefited you as the CEO?
Well, I'll start with why we did it. And I just felt that as the company was growing and more people were joining the team, that I would walk down the halls and see new faces, and I didn't know their names and I didn't know what they did. And I relied on my other leaders to build their teams. Mm-hmm. And I sort of felt a little disconnect. And then I realized that, you know, one of the most important things about my job is to constantly communicate the mission and the vision of the business. And I didn't want to lose that connection. So we formed the CEO luncheon, and we picked 7 people within the organization. And I think that was a good size group of people to have that interaction with. And we brought them from all areas of our business, and we had an opportunity to sit down for lunch. And I got an opportunity to share the vision and repeat the vision and reinforce why we're doing the things that we're doing. And I also gave them an opportunity to talk about the things that they wanted to start, as an example, or the things that they wanted to stop, or the things that we do as a business that they want to continue. And I got a lot of great feedback from that. And it's amazing because they're the front lines. They're the ones that, you know, face problems on a day-to-day basis. And the greatest opportunity that comes from those engagements is being able to act on one of their ideas. Because then they feel as if they really have, they can really contribute to the success of the company moving forward.
Mm-hmm. So how important do you think it is for everyone to understand what the vision is and ensure
critical.
That everyone's kind of rowing in the same direction?
Absolutely critical. I think what happens in a lot of organizations that are growing from, you know, startup to a scale-up environment is that there's a lot of different moving parts, which can distract you from the core mission of why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it creates complexities in terms of decision-making. If you have an undercurrent and an overarching vision and mission, then it makes it easier for everyone else to make decisions on their own, because they would use that as a benchmark or use that as a guide in terms of, is this decision going to help us get to our mission? Is this decision going to support the vision mm-hmm. of the business? And so it acts as a regulator. It acts as a filter when folks have to make decisions with their day-to-day operations.
Diving into kind of the company culture, you know, we see the ping pong table.
Sure.
Dean and I want to have a go at the in-house champions.
We've got some amazingly skilled players in the office.
I love it. So, you know, you do town halls. What else, how do you best describe the company culture as a whole, coming from top down?
You know, and it's probably shared with other businesses, but we view ourselves as a high-performing team. And I wouldn't really consider us a family, but there's family type of elements in terms of how we respect each other and how we want to see each other succeed and drive constant learning and drive engagement and really ensure that everyone feels as if they've got a career path in a larger sense, because our outlook is long term. Our outlook is not the next 2 or 3 years. It's the next 5 to 10 years for this business. And we want to encourage them and motivate them into understanding that this is a place where they can grow and learn and stay for the long term, which is not traditional in the technology space. I mean, it's typically a 2 to 4 year window, then they're off to the next thing. So we want to constantly keep them engaged and challenged. And we do that under the premise of high performance and to be challenged. It's not the ping pong table that defines our culture. It's not mm-hmm. the beer. That just creates bonds. And that creates a great work-life balance, because we are all humans after all. And the mechanics of running a business is really, really easy. I mean, when you really take a look at it, the mechanics of operating a business is pretty straightforward. It's people that make it hard. So, you know, you probably not, might not want to share this, but I'd hire a psychology major over an MBA 9 times out of 10, because it's really about how you influence, how do you inspire, how do you communicate? Do you understand that they might have had a bad day? So maybe now is not the time to hit them with a real challenging problem or a question at this point in time. It's that type of engagement that I think we try to foster and encourage here. Mm-hmm. And it's work-life balance that I think is very, very important. I find that if someone's well-rounded and they've got a really great family life, or they've really got a great personal life or a social life, that creates a multiplier effect on their enthusiasm to come to the organization and do some amazing things. And more importantly, it's a culture that is very customer-centric, whereby they actually leave their digital mark on the products that are being used by thousands of people around the world, mm-hmm. and benefiting millions of people around the world. So they actually can see their work being used in the field. And I think that is a real motivational and important and profound aspect of why they join LogiSense, is because we are customer centric and our technology is in use. It's not that we're in this early planning stage or we're in this concept stage. We're actually serving our customers. And we haven't raised any institutional funding, and I'm not disparaging that as a business model. I think it's important at a certain period of time. But my executive team and my leadership team spend 95% of their time thinking about ways to build better products that our customers will pay for. And that's a real profound and important decision that I made earlier on in the business that is working for us. And it's created sustainability and durability within our team and their outlook on the business longer term.
So let's take it back to 20-year-old Flavio. Actually, sure. let's rephrase it. Let's say, you know, a new graduate out of University of Waterloo, mm-hmm. starting out in an incubator.
I didn't go to University of Waterloo, and I spent a year in college, basically. I had a contract when I was very young to build out a network for an NGO, and it paid me a lot of money to do that.
Okay.
And so,
okay.
To my parents' disappointment, when I told them that I was heading to school, but to their disappointment, I told them that I had this big contract. And my father was a very practical, sort of old school, old country guy that said, you know, education is extremely important. And I do believe education is extremely important. And I lament the fact that I didn't get a chance to really experience the university lifestyle, because I think I would have learned a lot of things there as well. Mm. But I was just an entrepreneur at a very, very young age, and I got this contract and I built out this fantastic network. And it was a great learning experience for me, and I made some gas money along the way. And it really sort of shaped and formed my view on being, you know, somewhat of a, what's the word I'm looking for, a risk taker. Mm-hmm. And I knew that this is what I was meant to be, and I'm not certain I'd get any greater value by going to school to help my business future.
Right. But let's talk about that.
You have to be careful how you share that one.
Absolutely.
So I don't want to discourage anybody from going to university.
Someone starting out in an incubator, right? Upcoming mm-hmm. entrepreneur, uh-huh. whether they're, you know, coming out of university or not.
Yeah.
What's your advice to them? Like where to start, like what general advice?
You have to have an enormous abundance of excitement.
Yeah.
This is going to be the hardest thing you'll ever do.
Yeah.
And you have to realize that it's going to take everything you've got to succeed. Now, there's instances where there's going to be people that it just lands on their lap and things work out. But you have to have grit and determination, I think. Persistence is probably the single most important aspect of success. Mm-hmm. The other thing is surround yourself with great advice earlier on, and focus all your energy and efforts on getting to product market fit as quickly as you possibly can. Don't believe that money will solve all your problems. And I think that's a challenge with a lot of young entrepreneurs, is the fundraise is the predominant thing that they're working towards. It's really understanding the problem that you're trying to solve and really embracing that problem and having articulate ways to tell your story on how you're solving that problem and how you're persuasive enough to get someone to believe in you, maybe from a funding perspective, but predominantly more from a customer. Who will test you? Who will take that risk? Who will test your technology to help them solve a problem? Try to focus on problems that are relatively large. And by that I mean, you know, problems that will have a significant influence on how we evolve as a society. I think that's really, really important. A big, audacious goal is really, really important. Because that offers you a lot of options on how you can solve the problem in those types of ecosystems. And realize that a certain bit of madness is okay. And that you'll learn early whether you really are an entrepreneur or not. And it's a nature versus nurture conversation. It's a little bit of a religious discussion. And I firmly believe it's more natural. You're wired to be an entrepreneur or you're not. I don't think entrepreneur, you can teach someone to become an entrepreneur. It's an innate instinct, desire, and drive that you want to chart your own course. And you're absolutely clear on where you want to go as an individual.
Are there any specific habits you think are super important in starting out to have, like just specific day-to-day things?
Well, it depends on, I think it depends. I think it's different for everybody. I think there's different flavors of business ownership and different flavors of leadership and different flavors of being an entrepreneur. For me, it was, I really cared about people and I really cared about surrounding myself with incredibly passionate, incredibly inspired people. Because I think that's our greatest asset. It's not really the technology. It's really about the people that I work with. And there's two things that are predominant, that I use as a predominant filter when I decide or seek to engage someone within my organization or hire them within my business is you have big brains and you have great character. That covers 90% of the things that I look for. The rest can be taught or you can come in with a certain set of skills. But without the big brains and without the good character, you're not going to succeed in our organization.
That's a perfect segue into kind of this next section. You know, one of the things when we do these interviews, we talk about what the Waterloo region has meant to you and your growing business and how you've been able to kind of attract top talent. And, you know, employee retention is huge in this day and age with a ton of tech companies vying for this top talent. How are you able to kind of secure the workforce and have that loyal employee base that you do have here?
Well, the thing that's appealing about the Kitchener-Waterloo area is that I think we're a collection of humble technologists. And I think we don't drive around in the Ferraris and the Maseratis or flash the successes of our business. And maybe there's an element of that that's important, depending on what motivates you as an entrepreneur. But I can tell you, money really wasn't the key motivator for me. But that's a side story. It was just the community of people willing to help each other. There was Communitech, there's a lot of organizations that really provided a good support mechanism for early startups. And they were around in the early 90s. And that's how I got to meet a lot of people that influenced this business and helped me grow this business. I didn't do this alone. This community helped me. And what it's done is it made me realize that my constituents aren't just my customers or my team, but I also have to consider my community in terms of the strategic planning that I have within this business. So you've got the universities that have got great tech talent. And so we've hired a lot from the education system that we've got here. There's a growing tech cluster. There's spin-offs from larger organizations that have reached their apex, in a polite way of saying it, that have reached their apex that have seeded the community with a lot of talent. And I think LogiSense offers a slightly different approach to building businesses, and that's really grassroots business building principles, which is, you know, customers. Money doesn't solve all problems. Focus on our durable, sustainable, organic route to success. And success means a lot of things to different people. There are different things to different people. So I think we offer a culture that's really, really, really attractive in that respect.
So outside of the office here, what are you passionate about, and how important is it to you to find that work-life balance? How do you achieve that?
You know, obviously, first and foremost, my wife would kill me if I didn't say I'm passionate about my family, and I think that's the key
number one. Yeah,
that's the key driver for that. And I've been blessed in being able to find time to spend a lot of time with my family throughout the evolution of building this business. I've never missed a birthday. I've never missed a major event at school. I've always been around, and that fuels my energy for the business as well. That balance, that really great family life and support that they provide me is a key ingredient to the success that we're seeing at LogiSense. And I love to play guitar. I've been playing the guitar since I was a kid. I wanted to be a rock star, do all that type of stuff. Love fly fishing, love the outdoors. I live in Elora, beautiful town, great community.
Yeah.
It's very artistic. And it appeals to my creative side, the community that I live in. This business, the opportunity to be creative here has been a great benefit of building and driving this company forward.
Are you a book or a podcast guy?
I like them both.
Yeah.
Yeah, I listen to podcasts a lot in the car.
Yeah.
And it's a great way of ingesting data and information.
What's your favorite one right now?
Right now would probably be Malcolm Gladwell's. It's a podcast. It's a video, but it's a podcast on how to write better, how to communicate better. It's a masterclass what he has now. And I've been putting in my car through my headset, so you don't actually have to see the video to do that. It's been really good. It's been very, very impactful. And invest in those types of opportunities to get information from these types of folks that seem to be knowing what they're doing in that space.
Favorite book?
Oh, geez, there's so many of them.
How about most recent? That's probably the easiest one to tackle.
Most recent book, but it's not a business book at all. It's called Shantaram, and it's about this prison escapee who escapes to India and builds his whole new life in India, and he's from Australia, and all the challenges that he had to face with these, you know, drug cartels and all these travelers that are trying to escape their lives from other countries. And it's a fascinating book. It's really, really thick, and it's a very, very fascinating story. My wife's Indian, so I can relate to a lot of the foods that they eat and the places that they live in. So that's been interesting. It's a big one. It distracts me just before bedtime.
And families from the Azores.
Families from the Azores.
You get to go back to the motherland. Talk a little bit about kind of the culture there and how that was incorporated into Canada.
Well, it's fascinating. So I was born in the Azores, a small island called Flores, and it's such a beautiful, really isolated, remote group of islands in the middle of the Atlantic. It's on the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. And so they're essentially tops of volcanoes, and I would consider them sort of like the Atlantic version of Hawaii. It's temperate in the summertime. In the wintertime, it's a little bit foggy. It's got the same sort of climate as either Newfoundland or Ireland, and the same type of look. A very rugged, mountainous tops of volcanoes. There are very few beaches, more lava-based environment, but the oceans are absolutely beautiful, deep royal blue type of ocean. It's a very clean environment. There's not big industry there. There's, you know, it's farming and fishing has been the traditional sources of income. Now tourism is increasing as a source of income and a key driver to their economy. It's been recently classified, or maybe about 3 or 4 years ago, as a UNESCO heritage site. So it's going to be protected. I've got an interesting history there because my uncles and some members of my family were politicians, and they were the president of certain areas of the island. And my cousin's a lawyer and now aide to the prime minister in Portugal. So I've got a history there. So every time I come back, it's treated like red carpet. And they were very entrepreneurial in their own right in these very small, isolated communities. So it goes back to my notion of whether it's nature versus nurture. I think it was just our wiring, part of our family, to drive into leadership, to drive into business or into politics or what have you. Fascinating place. If you visit it, you'd absolutely fall in love with it.
Yeah, we're excited to get there. But really wanted to thank you for your time, sharing your wisdom, and sharing the story.
Awesome.
We wish you obviously continued success
thank
for
you.
Another 20, 40 years.
Yeah,
I know
fun.
It's not going to stop. So
no, it's just got to keep on going. This train's got a long track to drive.
Incredible. Thank you. Very kind.
Thank you. Awesome.
And there you have it, another episode of Startups to Scale-Ups. Hope you enjoyed it. Huge thank you to Flavio Gomes, one of my favorite founders within the Waterloo region ecosystem. I encourage you to go check out their website, www.logisense.com. See what they can do for you and your business. Again, they are a leader in their space, which provides flexible billing options to leading global businesses. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Take care until next time.
Thank you for listening to the Startups to Scale-Ups podcast with CBRE's Office Corridor Group. If you know of an incredible founder or tech influencer that should be showcased on our podcast, you can reach us on Instagram at Office Corridor Group or email todd.cooney@cbre.com. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe for more episodes and leave a review.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.